I'd like now to welcome to the Radio Cafe Peter Buffett. He's a composer, musician, writer, co-chairman of the Novo Foundation, author of the new book, Life is What You Make It. And he will be at the Lenzic Performing Arts Center this Thursday, the 7th of November at 7 o'clock. It's a concert and conversation with Peter Buffett, Life is What You Make It. It's presented by the Academy for the Love of Learning and is a benefit for the Academy's Institute for Teachers. And Aaron Stern joins us. He's founder and president of the Academy for the Love of Learning. Welcome, everybody, to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you, Mary Charlotte.
Thank you. Great to be here.
So let's talk for a moment about what you do at the Novo Foundation. The foundation gives away money, and the idea is to advance the lives of women and girls, their education, their lives. Why that focus?
Well, we really see the world, I say we, my wife Jennifer and I, see the world pretty out of balance. So we've got a lot of domination and exploitation going on, and we want to help foster a change towards collaboration and partnership, hopefully a friendlier world for all. And we do a few different things at the foundation to help support that. But girls and women seem to be the most efficient agents of change for a better world. Generally speaking, if you support a girl, it'll go back to her family and her future and future generations. And it's just a great way to get the world on course.
And so what do you actually do?
Well, we do a number of things. I mean, there are so many different ways to help support girls and women around the world. I mean, in some cases, it's education, certainly. That's an obvious one. Economic empowerment, changing legal structure, cultural norms. There's just a myriad of ways to support girls so that they become, agents of their own life, really. You know, they can make better choices in terms of marrying, having kids, health, welfare, all sorts of things.
Before we went on the air, Aaron was talking about some of the work that you do in India. Could you tell us a little bit about that?
Sure. And some of that is both heart-wrenching and heartwarming, I guess, because we do some work where it is about empowering the girls in terms of their education and their economic opportunity. And again, it comes in all sorts of forms. We work most importantly with people there in India on the ground. So it's lots of different NGOs doing great work to help support girls. The harder work is in the arena of sex trafficking and violence against women and trying to bring an end to that. And Aaron and I have both actually been to Calcutta and been into the largest red light district in Southeast Asia. And it is painful to see a price tag essentially put on anyone, but specifically a young girl, when it comes to, you know, being paid to have sex. And it's something that we're trying our best to end, not just reduce. And that's a lot of work.
How do people from outside the society get a foothold to even do that work at all?
Well, you definitely don't come in from the outside. I mean, that is the key, is that you work with people inside the society. So we find, through colleagues, through a lot of conversations and investigation, the best people working on the ground that are in country and of the culture. So we're not going in pretending like we have answers to somebody else's problems. You really do have to spend a lot of time in deep conversation and partnership with people that are there that understand the problems way better than you do, and then support them to help seek the change that all of us are trying to make.
Aaron Stern, does this tie into the work that you're doing here in New Mexico?
Yes, not particularly with women and girls, but I think, at the Academy, our work is based on a very simple concept of Martha Graham's, actually, where she says there is a vitality, a life force, an energy, a quickening that is translated through you into action. And because there is only one of you in all time, this expression is unique. And if you block it, it will never exist through any other medium, and it will be lost. And so Martha Graham, the great choreographer, is speaking of the preciousness of each human life. And so all of our work at the Academy, our Institute for Teachers, all of our many programs, all have that as the central thought, the central intention, that get to happen for every child, every teacher, all of us.
Peter Buffett, let's talk a little more about ending violence against women and girls. How does that tie into ending violence overall, ending war?
Well, you know, I just happen to be of the belief that women, because they give birth and are so directly connected to the ultimate creative process, obviously it takes two, but the women do the real work when it comes to bearing the children and nurturing the children, that if they have more seats at more tables, they're going to take a different approach to what, you know, certainly the preciousness of life and how people can actually resolve conflict in ways that doesn't end up in killing. You know, that's the bottom line. I mean, the women, I think, just have a more innate sense of how can we work this out and not end a human life. And, you know, that's where we start. And again, with the foundation dollars going into not only women but adolescent girls, so that as they become women, they make better choices, they're able to make better choices, and their children then have a better world to grow up in. So in a variety of ways, supporting the girls before they become women, and then as they are women, to have seats at the table, voices in all sorts of conflict areas and otherwise, you get different results.
It's interesting because, I mean, again, this sort of applies to the world that we're living in now. And when you bring more women to the table, unless we're like 30 to 50%, mm-hmm. a lot of the time we just become like the men around us if we're in positions of power.
That's right.
Right. That is an important issue to raise, too. That's right.
So when you are in an area, whether it be India or Africa or all the different places where you are doing work, and an NGO, a non-government organization, is doing work to promote, for example, the education of women and girls in an area where women's education is not only valued but really attacked, I mean, you have to somehow also change the cultural attitudes of men of the oppressing class. Do you see that happening?
Yes, but again, that is the delicate and complicated issue for sure in our work, because we certainly don't want to go in from the outside. I call it philanthropic colonialism. You know, you don't want to go in and tell somebody else how they should be living. And so you find a certain leader, there's always some men that get it, you know, and of course a girl is someone's child, and there are some men that can hear it, see it in their own children, and see the value, and you try and find the best messengers, you know, inside of the culture that can start to bring change, because they're always everywhere. You know, you just have to take the time to find them and to kind of tease them out of the air. That's true, you know, here in America, you know, with civil rights and things. You know, you find the like-minded people and work very slowly and deliberately to make that change, but it has to happen from within, and it may take a long time. I mean, one of the things at our foundation we remind ourselves often is that we may not be around when the change we seek is actually starting to take place, and that's okay. We're not interested in quarterly reports. You know, this is going to take a while.
You know, Peter, as you speak, I'm reminded when we were in Bihar, part of India, and sitting with a little girl, it was Gloria Steinem, myself, and Jennifer Buffett, Peter's wife, and the little girl looked up and said through a translator, "The most difficult thing for me is when I leave this safe place that I am right now," which is one of the projects that the Novo Foundation's involved with. One of the things that happens is I go home on weekends with a companion, somebody to make sure I'm safe, and the big question for me, the most difficult thing, is how do I say to my parents, "You can't sell me," because, of course, I'm part of their business plan. And it was so shocking for me as a man, as a human being, sitting there listening. And in that moment, Gloria Steinem leaned over to the child and said, "Well, you must tell your father that actually he doesn't have the right to sell you." And this little girl, you could see her eyes open up, and she was trying to understand this, just on the depth of her soul, she was trying to absorb this. And Gloria said, no human being has the right to sell another human being. He can sell himself if he would like, but he can't sell you. And this little child started to nod her head and welled up in tears. We all did. And there was just this moment of recognition of the truth of that. And so I think in the work of the Novo Foundation, something on that very, very individual level is happening all the way up to a policy level. So it's a big project, and as Peter says, it's a 300-year project.
Yeah. Right.
Very much so. We're talking to Peter Buffett and Aaron Stern. Now, Peter, you wrote an op-ed in the New York Times last summer about the potential and the limits of philanthropy, and you brought up the problem, which I found very, I'm glad you did, because you found it very important, of basically being in a room full of people who are trying to solve a problem with their right hand that they created with their left hand. What's an example of that?
Well, you know, it's interesting because I've stayed away from specifics only to not, you know, take anybody down the path being pointed out as hypocritical. But I will say that the examples, generally speaking, are not that hard to think of. I mean, if you think of the large gatherings that are starting to happen more and more in philanthropy, where you have leaders of nations as well as leaders of corporations sitting with NGOs. And, you know, again, it's just not hard to imagine the scenario where someone from a large corporation is feeling very good about themselves because they're in this room saying, we'll give, you know, some amount of money to solve an issue around, let's say, an environmental situation in Africa, or maybe a small business situation in an African country or something, and you know, they're giving away this just minute percentage of what their profits have to have been that year. And you know, meanwhile, the same corporation is spewing, you know, millions of gallons of something into some river that's upstream from the very thing they're trying to take care of. And of course, then the national leader is there, and he most likely, unfortunately, in many countries, has one hand kind of, you know, gathering some of the money that's coming through the various leases that the corporation might be taking out in that country, and then at the same time, you know, applauding the work of this NGO who's there trying to take care of some of the people. I mean, it's this crazy loop of profit first and people second almost always. And, you know, we're seeing that in so many different places in the world today. And that's what I just couldn't take much more of before I had to say something about it.
Yeah, I mean, this profit first, people second, I mean, so many examples. You can imagine somebody clear-cutting a forest and then helping the people who were displaced by the clear-cut and who can no longer make a living. There's people who don't have safe drinking water because of the chemical toxicity, and then somebody will give, you know, what's a nominal amount. But basically, I mean, the central problem, the elephant on the coffee table or whatever they call it, is an economic system that's driven by having good quarterly profit reports. Mm-hmm. And in addition to that, or hand in hand with that, a culture of not really respecting human life or seeing that the economic system is for people.
Mm-hmm. Right, right. I mean, I talk about us going, you know, trying to return to a relationship, a world based on relationships as opposed to transactions. You know, I mean, it's really, we've gone so far. You know, we've gone from citizens to consumers. You could look at it a lot of different ways, and that's why in the op-ed, I sort of skirted a little bit of the issue around capitalism by saying I'm not calling for an end to capitalism. I'm calling for humanism. But the point of that really is that humanism is a level above an economic system. So if you really call for humanism, you probably are calling for an end to capitalism, frankly, because our system is not definitely not putting people first.
I had the great privilege to interview the poet and philosopher Gary Snyder a few days ago. And there's a passage in his book, The Practice of the Wild, that jumped out at me. And it's short, so I'm going to read it. And it says this: our conservationist environmentalist moral outrage is often, in its frustration, aimed at the logger or rancher, when the real power lies in the hands of people who make unimaginably larger sums of money, people impeccably groomed, excellently educated at the best universities, male and female alike, eating fine foods and reading classy literature while orchestrating the investment and legislation that ruin the world. And I thought, there you have it. it's summed up there. I imagine, Peter Buffett, that you know some of these folks.
Well, you know, it's funny. A lot of people do imagine that, but luckily, I know people like Aaron. honestly, I was very fortunate to follow a path of my own making through music staying connected to that connection in me. And it allowed me to be in very different company. And in fact, my father really has followed his own muse. I mean, it's not so much that he is this uber capitalist. He's really just a guy that can look at numbers differently than most of us and sort of, you know, just take all this information and synthesize it into his own version of art, really. And that's so even he doesn't sit in the room with very many of these people because his mindset is based in a very different frame, actually. And so I've been very lucky in that way, and I've been very lucky to have the father I've had, because his was not a pursuit of profit. His was a love of numbers and facts and figures, and he just, it's a very different mentality than most people think.
Your father being, just for our audience, the very famous Warren Buffett. Nevertheless, I wanted to ask you, and I wanted to ask Aaron Stern at all, do you think there is a way, you say you don't know these people, I'm sure you know some of them, I mean, a way to reach these people, yeah, to get them to take responsibility for the land and water and air that they're destroying?
Yeah. Well, I think I'd like to respond to that, because I have trouble with that. It's actually we. So we're all cogs in a particular wheel, part of a particular dream that we keep dreaming and enlivening and making real. And I think that we can point to any part of that system and all of the different cogs, and we can talk about the role that each cog plays. But I think if we want to do something differently, we have to come together and see that we're doing something we don't value anymore and make a change. I've really learned over the years that the pointing finger or vilification of any part of the system is actually not going to solve the problem. It's more stepping back and looking at what we've created and asking ourselves if it works or doesn't work, or do we want to change it. Otherwise, there's a hardening and there's a loss of... Well, it turns into a big fight, and actually that doesn't solve anything. I see that a lot with teachers. I see that, for example, the Institute for Teachers at the Academy is focused on supporting teachers and the vision of teachers, and rather than pointing to them and saying, you're the problem, they're actually, again, a cog in a wheel that's part of a system that's dysfunctional. So rather than blaming going to our superintendent, blaming going to, you know, anybody in the system, it doesn't solve anything. So I just want to make a bid for peaceful peaceful change.
Yeah, Peter. And I would add to that that it's so easy to say what's wrong with you, and the better question, I think, is what happened to you, you know, because I think all of us have collectively as a country as well as individually had personal trauma, personal situations that have caused us to think that it's, you know, we have to live out this particular version of life, and we are all doing it in some way collectively, and I think the more honest, vulnerable, open question is, how did we get here, and is it working for us? And I almost everyone would say no. And then it's like, how do we then work towards a different outcome and a different future for our children, really?
We're talking to Peter Buffett and Aaron Stern. Now, the event coming up later this week on the 7th of November, that's a Thursday, is both a concert and a talk. Let's talk about the musical part of the evening.
Yes.
Well, the, you know, let's see, how do I explain this? I was very fortunate to have parents that really allowed me in a way to nurture myself, and they nurtured me as well. But again, my parents always said, find something you love, but, you know, reach into your passionate self and bring that out. And if you're lucky, because not everybody can identify it right away, go for it. And it wasn't, and we'll write you a check. It was go for it and stumble and get up and learn about yourself all along the way. And again, I saw my dad do what he loved. I didn't see more houses and boats and, you know, all that kind of stuff. I just saw the same guy come home every day happy because he was into it. And so I was fortunate to connect to music in my life and turn that into a livelihood, and wrote music for commercials and film and television and that sort of thing. And only fairly recently have I become Warren Buffett's son. Nobody really thought about that too much, and I didn't either. But I realized that by telling my story and talking about the values I grew up with, it might, you know, inspire others. And of course, music is a big part of that. And so the musical aspect of the show is myself at the piano and Michael Cott, who is Santa Fe's own. He lives there, and he's on cello, and he and I perform together a variety of songs that kind of go from instrumental and sort of reflective and open to very specific with vocals and very pointed towards some of the things I'm talking about in the show.
So it's an evening with Peter Buffett, a concert and conversation. Are you the other part of the conversation, Aaron?
Well, I'll begin the conversation. I'll be speaking about the Academy and the Institute for Teachers and our hopes for the teachers and children in this community and throughout the world, really, from our work. And introducing Peter, we'll be showing a video of our work at the Academy and also having some real live teachers there who will talk about how they've been touched by the work of the Academy and what this all means to them. And then we'll introduce Peter and all sit in a great, delightful experience. And there will be questions from the audience coming to Peter, and it'll be a wonderful, wonderful evening. And let me just tell you, I know Peter's work well, and it'll be a beautiful evening, I'm sure.
Aaron Stern is founder and president of the Academy for the Love of Learning. Peter Buffett is composer, musician, and co-chairman of the Novo Foundation. And once again, this Thursday, November 7th at 7 o'clock at the Lenzic Concert and Conversation. Thank you both so much for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks so much for having me.